in 100 years.
That shit house,
if you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched. We're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one cup.
Hello and welcome to Two Guys, One Cup Summer Edition. My name is Charlie Clawson and this series is called My Club, where I chat to different supporters of AFL teams and try and get to the bottom of why they support the team that they do, learn a bit more about the culture and the history and the characters that the outsider might not know about. This week, we're chatting with Lynn McGranger, who I worked with for a number of years on Home and Away. Lynn actually holds the record for the longest-serving actress to play the same character in an Australian television series. But she's also a mad keen Swans supporter. In fact, I think she loves all sport. I remember most of our time on set spent together was Lynn checking cricket scores, football scores, always at games. But I'm really interested to talk to Lynn about the Swans, a team that, admittedly, in the last couple of years, I have come to know nothing about. I understand there's a guy called Jake Lloyd. Apparently, he's pretty good. But apart from that, I really don't know that much. Anyway, let's get to Lynn McGranger. Lynn, I'm so glad to see you. It's been so long. How are you?
Darling, I'm very well. Thank you very much. Getting through this crazy year, 2020, but all is good. We, you know, have our health and I'm back at work and life is good, so mustn't grumble.
Yeah, so let's talk about the really important things, which is football. Now,
you got it.
In the intro, I mentioned that when I met you, I don't think I've met anyone who's quite as sports crazy as you are. Like, I seem to feel like you're always checking your phone for score, cricket scores,
football on the weekend, AFL scores, yeah. And NRL. And I'm not an NRL person at all, but you know, I don't mind the Melbourne Storm. If I had a team, it would be them. Although I don't like Queensland, so that, you know, puts me at odds. So actually, it doesn't really, because when it comes time to State of Origin, you know, it's a win-win, really. Because if New South Wales lose, then Melbourne Storm are winning because they, half of them are in Queensland. But no, mostly cricket and, you know, and of course women's cricket these days is next level, it's brilliant. And of course, our beloved AFL.
So what I am interested to know is, as a Melburnian who moved to Sydney, like when I first started going to games at the SCG, I noticed there was actually a different culture of supporting in Sydney than there is in Melbourne. Like, it seemed much more sophisticated and urbane. Like, Will and I often make the joke on Two Guys, One Cup that the first time I ever saw sushi at the football was at the SCG.
And that's funny.
And so for someone who didn't necessarily grow up, I imagine, because you grew up in New South Wales with the game, what was your entry into the Swans?
Oh, my entry into the Swans was we'd lived down in Melbourne for about, let me think, we moved down there in about 88. And then I moved back for Home and Away in 92. So I was down there for about 3 or 4 years. Our daughter was born down there. And Paul is from Albury Wodonga. Right. So his team is the Wodonga Bulldogs.
Right.
And the first game I ever went to was in 1985, and it was the grand final between the Wodonga Bulldogs and we think either the Albury Tigers or Lavington. Anyway, Wodonga won by a bazillion points. And it was very exciting. It was great to watch. I didn't have a clue what was going on, but I enjoyed it immensely. So then when we moved down to Melbourne, we tended to go, oh, well, like Paul was kind of a bit North Melbourne because Wodonga Bulldogs were kind of one of the feeder lower grades into North Melbourne. But then we moved to Burnley. So we were like in the Richmond catchment area. And I used to go for Richmond. Oh, my God, kill me now. And so back then they were kind of, you know, we used to joke and sing ninth again. Once we were eighth, but now we're ninth again, which, of course, you can't do now because they keep winning, the bastards. But anyway, so we did that. And then we moved to Thornbury. And we were still, you know, kind of into it, but, you know, it was it was sort of more on the periphery. Also, we had a young child, so, you know, sport sort of does take us a bit of a back seat. But Clancy, our daughter's godfather, was a mad South Melbourne supporter, like mad South Melbourne supporter. And, of course, they'd up sticks and gone up to Sydney. So when we knew we were going up there, Al, Clancy's godfather, said, "You have to go for the Sydney Swans. You have to go for the Sydney Swans." And we're like, well, we probably will, because that's where we're going. So we'll go for the Sydney Swans. So it was probably, it would have been early 90s that we moved up to Sydney, and we've just got more and more passionate about them ever since.
It's funny, every person that I've spoken to so far about how did you start supporting your team, it always seems to be one of two things, which is it's a family thing, it's like a bloodline thing. Like, as you have a surname, you barrack for this team.
Absolutely.
Or it's the complete opposite, where it's people pick and choose and they'll start with one team and go to another. And then generally it's a friend, a good friend or a neighbour or someone like that, or someone who goes to the games every week and, you know, takes someone's kid to the game. So this friend of yours, was he one of the rare South Melbourne supporters who was okay about South Melbourne going to Sydney? Because there was a group, I remember, that sort of kicked up a fuss for a couple of years. Yeah, as you'd imagine.
Well, I can't remember the exact year they went. I think they went in the 80s, the mid-80s. 82, there you go, the early 80s. Well, see, this was a good 10 years later.
So he had made peace, but you said he was a South Melbourne supporter.
He'd made peace with him.
Right.
Yeah, but he was a Sydney boy originally anyway. And so obviously he'd followed South Melbourne down there, and then we went from Sydney down to Albury, Wodonga, and then we were in Melbourne, a big group of us in the theatre and stuff. And, so he kind of got us onto it. But, you know, with hindsight, it would have been a done deal anyway, because it was the only team in Sydney.
Yeah.
And Paul certainly doesn't give two hoots about the NRL.
Yeah.
He thinks it's a ridiculous game because he's a Victorian. He's a, you know, from Wodonga. He's, you know, Wodonga Bulldogs.
Yeah.
That's kind of how we got into it, and we've just got progressively crazier about them as the years have gone on.
Yeah, and so tell me, like, it's probably you've been supporting them for too long now, maybe you don't remember, but because you came to it as an adult, like, did you find it, what appealed to you first about the game, or was it confusing? Were there too many rules?
No, I think that's what I loved about it. There was hardly any. You know, just a bunch of blokes in really, really short shorts, kicking balls and jumping up and, you know, bad mullets and all of that. It was a basically easy game to follow, but it was exciting because it's so quick moving. Mm. Whereas, you know, rugby league, I think, because I don't ask me about rugby union. I know there's way too many rules in that. And plus, no one has a neck in that game. But anyway, it's just the way it is. But the thing with rugby league is it's always so predictable. You know, you five tackles, you've got to hand the ball over or kick it on. And whereas Aussie rules was just like this wonderful free-for-all with people leaping up people's backs and taking insane catches and kicking impossible goals. And, you know, it was just exciting to watch and high-scoring, but also you didn't have to kind of ponder what was going on. And as someone who was a bit of a, I suppose, a Philistine back in those days, didn't know much about the sport at all, I just found it exciting, and certainly the crowds around. I mean, you have to go to a Wodonga Bulldogs game to experience that.
Was that the guys in the cars honking the horn after every goal? I love that.
I love it. Oh, my God, it was so fun. It was so fun, but in a good way. Like, no one got ugly. No one got aggressive or punching people out or anything like that. Certainly I never saw that. So, That's really what got me into the game, that it was an easy game to follow.
So was that round about the early 90s? So what I want to know is, do you remember the Edelston years, Geoffrey Edelston, Warwick Capper, or was that just a bit before? That was while you were still in
just
Melbourne.
Just a little bit before, but I certainly remember the pink helicopter. I remember Leanne Edelston being married to this really, really old guy.
He's been old for like the last 40 years. He was old in the 80s.
He's always been old. And look at the wives he's had.
They get younger as he gets older.
I know, but also more bizarre. It's like, oh, God, anyway, They say power is attractive. Go figure. But, of course, Warwick Kappa and Joanne Kappa, and they were kind of, you know, I don't know, they were like the pin-up couple, weren't they, of the sport. It was hard to tell, you know, well, there was sometimes who was who. They had the same hairdo.
There was the makings of a really great team in there. I mean, that was the one thing that Jeffrey Edelston, from the brief research I've done knowing I was speaking to you, Days, is that Jeffrey Edelston, for his eccentricities, he did go out and get Tom Hafey and Greg Williams and Jared Healey, and he assembled that core of your first really good team. Two Brownlow medalists came out of that era for you guys. And then when things started to go off the rails is round about when you decided to start following up in Sydney. So I think that's really interesting because you picked a club that, or became aware of a club when they were the glamour club, when they had the high-flying Warwick Kappa and stuff. But then when you decided, okay, I'm into this. That's when you entered. Yeah. What was that like?
Well, again, because I hadn't really – I mean, you've got to remember I'd followed old ninth again Richmond.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't – I wasn't used to following a winning team anyway. So it would have been worse in a way if they had have been like, you know – kind of the winning teams, the, you know, remember Brisbane in the 90s went through that. They were unbeatable. I mean, if the Swans had been like that and then we jumped on board and then they lost, it would have been awful. But we were able to actually watch them get better and better and better, and, of course, leading up until 2005.
And that would just, I imagine that would give you like a great sense of kind of, not ownership, but you were like there, they'd only been around for 10 years when you jumped on board and they were shit. Yeah. So no one could accuse you of being on a bandwagon because you were there at the coalface when there was, what, like 10,000 people at the SCG.
Absolutely, if that. And but what's so lovely about it, Charlie, and one of the things that I really regret about getting a second team in Sydney is that it crossed all borders.
Right.
So it didn't matter whether you lived in Mossman or you lived in Tregear out in Mount Druitt. Didn't matter if you were, you know, earning $200,000 a year or you're on the dole. Everybody went to the Sydney Swans. And I loved that. It really crossed borders. Now, of course, you know, it's got so big that we've got Greater Western Sydney Giants, and they're a great team, but we've kind of are split in two now. So what you have got is you've got Western Sydney, and then you've got the rest of Sydney, and it is a bit. Unfortunately, I think that the Sydney Swans, in a way, are looked on a bit as the Silvertails through no fault of their own. But it's just that you've got a Western Sydney team, which is traditionally working class.
I mean, it's ironic, isn't it? Like the Greater Western Sydney team are the ones who have been bankrolled by millions of dollars and have had the elite talent brought in, and all those kids have been like handpicked and groomed from state representative sides and stuff. But because of their geographic location, they, I mean, there's a few things going into that though. Like Sydney are Silvertails. This is what I think is so fascinating. And I want to get your take on Sydney's culture, but my experience of the Swans as an outsider was the glamour team of the late 80s that just fizzled out. Then there was the Ron Barassi years where you guys were just pitiful. Then there's the Plugger resurgence.
Yeah.
And then when Paul Roos takes over, that's when you really establish that identity of the Bloods, the no dickhead policy. Sydney could take any team player who was like troubled or discipline issues at another club and rehabilitate them and turn them into a great role player. Mm. And that was, and then they ground out those two premierships just with pure sort of like heart and resilience and passion and all that kind of stuff. But it got to a point, I guess, where you become a victim of your own success. Where so after the 2012, suddenly you get Buddy Franklin, suddenly you get Kurt Tippett, and now we're all looking at Sydney like, oh, wait a minute, we liked you when you were the working class heroes, but now you've had two flags. You just paid, you know, $1 billion to get Buddy Franklin to your club. Yeah. All of a sudden, I feel.
And how's that working for us?
Well, look, you can't argue with that contract that Buddy got, can you? Like, you don't regret that.
No, but I'm just saying that. You know, a Buddy has been a bit injured.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
Well,
you know, he hasn't played all year.
10-year contract.
I mean, when was the last time he played?
Yeah, almost 2 years.
It was probably early last year sometime at the earliest.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like in 2019.
But you can understand why you have the silver tail reputation now, because you've had success, and once you start bringing in the marquee players, and like the SCG is one of my favourite places to watch AFL. Even though it's like small and boutique and stuff, it's more about where it is geographically. Like you can walk there from the city.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many great pubs. There's Centennial Park. There's so much history around there. And because the weather generally in Sydney is a lot nicer than Melbourne. Like when you get that twilight game and you see the sun setting over the stand, and like it's just a beautiful place to go. But it does also feel, I don't know if this is the right word, but like kind of elite, you know, it feels like.
Do you think so?
I think so, yeah. I mean, that's maybe because I don't have your history with, you know, going in the early 90s when it was just the hardcore, rusted on Swan supporters.
Yeah, I suppose because to me, you know, the blokes who came up from Sydney in the early 80s, they were, I remember talking to one of the women who, a couple of the women who were married to them, the older players, and they were poor as church mice.
Yeah, right.
Like they were poor. They all like lived in group housing. They would have to go, you know, try and borrow a cup of sugar and do. They had no income. A lot of them had kids, and so. With that kind of those sort of roots, I guess it was your Jeffrey Edelstons that came in and poured money into it, right? You know, for better or for worse. But you're right; it was only really with the advent of Paul Roos as the coach that the team, I think, started to, if you pardon the expression, grow balls. You know, like as in didn't rely on the finances and things like that. Now I take on board what you're saying about the whole Buddy Franklin thing. Anchor. He wanted to move to Sydney.
And Kurt Tippett, because it was two in a row, remember? It was two sort of high-priced forwards, one after the other, and it just sort of looked like, oh, look, they're buying premierships now or they're buying players, because even though that's just what happens in football, everyone wants to go to Richmond now, everyone wants to go to Geelong now, you know?
Well, and speaking of Geelong, what is going on down there? How on earth do they afford paying for all those fabulous players under the salary cap?
I have no idea.
It's nuts.
The salary cap to me is one of those like magical terms that, like, it feels like every year Carlton are getting someone in the trade period. Like they'll pay top dollar for Zach Williams or whatever, and then you know the year before it was someone else. And it's like, where is this money coming from? Like, I don't.
Is everyone else on Thrippins Halfpenny? this is what you got to ask yourself. Like when Buddy came in, it's like, well, you know, you'll get $5 and a meat pie. That's your pay for the week.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you have to be so careful. Because look what happened to the Melbourne Storm.
Yeah.
You can't afford to go over the salary cap, but. As far as the Swans go, I don't know what's going to happen with Buddy. And, of course, bloody Eddie Maguire, I'm sorry I can say this, all of that carry-on about not paying the COLA,
living away from home allowance.
People that were coming up from Melbourne, the young blokes who were coming up from Melbourne, were really struggling to live in Sydney because, you know, 5-10 years ago, the discrepancy was enormous.
Yeah.
And then, of course, old mate, Collingwood mate, just, you know, stuck his bib in and said, no, you know, you're not getting it anymore. I guess that's sort of all evened itself out now. It's not as extreme. The living, the price of living isn't as great. The discrepancy in the price of living isn't as great as what it once was.
Yeah, maybe that's why they can't get a team in Tasmania, because the players would be making too much money. Because what are you paying for a mortgage in Tassie these days?
Yeah, exactly. Or some cheese and wine. Not much.
But, yeah, that culture around the Bloods, it was so kind of that rivalry with the West Coast in the noughties and that those two grand finals in a row, I think that really solidified, you know, the culture of the club, at least to outside players.
Yeah.
But is there something else that you think defines that blood culture, that never say die, that kind of workmanlike?
Well, you know what? I think there's a few things, Charlie. What stands out to me is Adam Goods. and all that surrounded him, all of that awful, awful period that surrounded him, and how the whole city, the whole state just got behind him. Mm. And, you know, a bit like, I suppose, you know, with Nicky Winmar,
yep,
back in the day, but more so because it had become such a thing. And then, again, you know, with people saying awful things about, I won't say Eddie McGuire's name again, but I just think that was, to me, a pivotal moment when all of the, you know, Sydney got behind Goodsy. And of course, prior to him was Mickey O, but for some reason, Goodsy was kind of, you know, he was the one that was crucified.
It's one of the greatest travesties in our game's history is that he got chased out of the game. The fact that he did not
so upset.
Get the exit that Gary Ablett got, you know, it's really, yeah. I think with those two documentaries that have come out in Australian Dream and Final Quarter, I think that a lot of people are going to be on the wrong side of history, and a lot of them feature in those two documentaries.
Yeah.
Because I remember at the time when all that good thing, I was doing Home and Away with you at the time when that was all going on, and, you know, speaking to different people who worked on the show, and some of them being like, oh, he's a whinger and this happens to everyone at the football.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but does it? And, you know, I think that all those people who were saying, oh, I boo him because, you know, he's a dirty player or he's a sniper or whatever.
Not
because I'm racist.
Because,
I think now we can all agree that booing was predominantly driven by racism. And if you were partaking in the booing, then you were giving license to it.
Absolutely. You were, even if you, you know, could swear on a Bible, I'm not racist, the fact that you are doing it is giving the nod to others.
Yeah.
And you need to, we all needed to take a stand, and it still breaks my heart to think that such a lovely man, and I've met him a couple of times, and, you know, you may have too, but he's a lovely man. He's a good person, and he was a fabulous player.
Yeah.
One of the best, and probably, you know, helped win certainly the 2005 grand final.
I mean, it's staggering too when you think about the shit that players get up to in their careers, the scandals they're involved in.
Yeah.
And he was a clean skin. He was a clean skin, and they still crucified him. And it's like, so that's what it takes. Like, you can be, you know, the ultimate professional. You can win the highest accolade twice. You can win two flags.
Mm.
But if you're an Indigenous player who gets a bit uppity, then they'll be held to play.
Oh, what do you mean you called somebody out for calling you an ape or whatever? And he took dives. Don't make me sick.
Yeah.
How many, you know.
Well, that wasn't backed up statistically. Like, they've gone into that. That's not true.
Absolute crap. He was hounded. He was pilloried. And it still breaks my heart. And I'm, you know, I'm just glad that he's married and he's got children or a child, and he's happy and he's out there preaching the good word about acceptance and in all walks of life, especially in sport.
Well, let's get back to some happier memories. So can you remember the first player that really captured your imagination? Who was the first one that you'd like, I will go every weekend just to see him play?
Oh, that's hard. Look, I probably would say Goodsy again, but going back even before that, I reckon, because I was there when Plugger kicked his 1300s.
Yeah.
And we were like, I was right behind
that wobbly,
we right
that
behind
wobbly
the
old kick. His 1300 was his
and
worst.
And everybody rushed on the field, which you couldn't do it these days.
Can you imagine?
Oh, and it was just, and because if you've seen him since, he's about a quarter of the size he was.
Yeah.
Actually, really quite a shy, introverted person, and I think the Swans hired him as a kicking coach or something like that. But I guess prior to him, or maybe around the same time, Mickey O'Loughlin.
Yeah, magic.
Just, again, a beautiful human being and a great player and a great representative of our Indigenous people and also of AFL.
Yeah.
Love him very much. But there's been many And like you, I'm not a statistician, and I can't remember what came, you know, who came first or what came second. But those two people stand out in my mind, and of course, Goodsy.
Yeah, and the exciting thing too is that if it was a story, you know, like if you started a novel of the Swans in 1990, it's had the perfect build for you, where it's like, you know, overcoming early adversity, and then Plugger arrives, you know, the great white hope, and then you get into that grand final and you lose and you dip a little bit, but then, you know, Rodney Eade comes along and takes you a bit further, but hands over to Paul Roos, and you get all these like draft picks, you rehabilitate another troubled St Kilda forward, Barry Hall, and bring him into the
fold. Oh, big bad Barry, who used to punch people out and then go, what? I didn't hold his hands up. Wasn't me.
But it is interesting, isn't it, that like twice in a row the Swans turned to St Kilda to take our troubled big forward and turn them into like a model citizen and a great player. I mean, it seems like, you know, Barry couldn't stay a model citizen his entire career. You did have to offload him in the end.
Yeah.
But like what
he went to the Bulldogs, did he, after
he went
that?
To the Bulldogs, yeah.
But then we did give you the wonderful Adam Schneider.
Oh, yeah, and Sean Dempster.
The fabulous Papley.
Yeah.
And Zach Jones.
No.
You're welcome.
We didn't get Tom Papley. We got Zach Jones. Tom.
Oh, not Papley. Sorry, we've still got Papley.
Yeah. Who did we know? Oh, we got Zach Jones. I don't know. Did we get someone else?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Schneider, Dempster.
No, there was somebody else. Oh, my God.
Doesn't matter.
I'm an idiot. Paul would know. Oh, God, we were just talking about it. Anyway, it'll come to me. But no, not Papley. He's still with us.
Yeah, but look, I mean, look, I'll thanks for Adam Schneider, but he's no Tony Lockett.
No. But by golly, he could move around the field. And another lovely person. I actually know his mum from Spirit of the Land, from Lockhart.
Right.
And we went out there and did, you know, back in the days when they were, you know, would celebrate the land and have a festival and try and raise money for the farmers because there was a lot of mental illness and yada, yada. But just by chance I happened to meet Sue, his mum. Mm. And, just lovely. I can see why he's such a nice person because of his roots and his family.
So just tell me what it was like being on the ground floor of a team as it builds. Like, I imagine if you're a Gold Coast supporter at the moment, maybe not GWS because they seem to have hit the ground running, but, you know, Gold Coast, who are trying to establish themselves, getting very low numbers to the game. I mean, that was the SCG in the early 90s. I read something that it was like, you know, you averaged 10,000 a game for about 3 years in a row. But then from the Plugger era, they starts building up to 30,000. So what was that like? Could you feel the buzz growing? Was it like would it happen suddenly? Was it a gradual thing?
I think it was a gradual thing, Charlie, just because it was the new sport in town.
Yep.
In a way.
It became a thing.
It had been
a
sort of strange thing that happened, you know, out of the SCG for a few years, and then all of a sudden, you know, we're winning.
Yeah.
What is this about? and then of course Telly jumped on board and all of that. And I think, I do think it was a gradual thing. But I suppose like with any, once you get your hooks into something, you stay with them through hell and high water.
That's the one thing I would say about Swan supporters is in all the Swan supporters I've met up here who are like either, you know, born and raised in Sydney or, you know, dyed in the wool kind of refugees from another state. So loyal, like really fiercely loyal and
fiercely
one-eyed.
Loyal.
Like in-
oh, yeah. But then who's not, Dahl? Who's not? I mean, you're I know you're a Saints boy and you're very one-eyed and that's okay too. You know, that's all right. I just, look, from my point of view, there's certain teams I like.
Yep.
There's some I tolerate and there's some I don't like at all.
Give me three you like and three you don't like.
Okay, right. So I like obviously the Sydney Swans.
And they you can't name your own team.
Oh, I can't name them.
Three
okay,
other,
all right.
Three other teams you like.
I'm going to say, okay, I like the Brisbane Lions.
Okay.
Because I think in this era, this last 10 years, they've really kind of hit rock bottom and they're really, you know, fighting their way back and they seem to be, their supporters aren't hideously one-eyed and awful, unlike some others I can mention. And they, I just think they're in there giving it a real good crack. I do think so, yeah. And I think they're good players.
Yeah.
So I like Brisbane. Gold Coast I don't know much about. I'm not just saying this because it's you. I do like St Kilda.
Well,
because
St Kilda is no threat to anyone. St Kilda is a lot of people's second team.
You beat us this year.
Yeah, I know. But, like, in terms of ultimate success.
Your turn will come.
You would have no bad memories. Like, not many people have bad memories about playing St Kilda in a big game because we tend to lose the big ones.
But that's all right. Your time will come, you know, and if you are a dedicated supporter, you'll live to see that. But, St Kilda would be the other one. And then... Look, I run hot and cold about Geelong.
Right.
They are a good team, but I've got to tell you, their supporters can suck sometimes. Like, yeah. They're so one-eyed cats. And can I just tell you, one of my favourite memories is 2005 preliminary final. We were down about 23 points. Yeah. Nick Davis come to save us.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Like, that bloke got... I don't know. He got pinged by the ninja fairy. Yeah. He just turned into a flipping ninja, and it was one of those golden moments in your life where you go, even if we don't win the grand final, which we did,
yeah.
Even if we don't win the grand final, this is one of the best days of my life.
One of the best quarters of football you'll ever see.
Extraordinary.
The thing that blows my mind, because, you know, they always show that last goal that kicks out of that ruck contest, you know, ad nauseum, and they keep saying it was a set play. But when I've watched that thing maybe 100 times, it's so chaotic. I can't believe that this is a set play. Or if it's a set play, what is the play?
Yeah, exactly. And with balls and people everywhere.
Bobbling around.
3.3 seconds on the clock.
Unbelievable.
It was like Paul, you know, Paul, yep. My partner, he watches it, I don't know, once a month, and he still yells, still screams, his blood pressure still goes up. It's just one of those insane moments.
Yeah.
Where you just, that was great. That was great. And, of course, we did go on to win the grand final, which was extraordinary. I remember that too. And then, of course, the following year we were disappointed, but that was okay because, you know, that was West Coast. I'm hot and cold about West Coast too. One of our best mates is a dyed-in-the-wool West Coast supporter.
Mm.
Nick Natnui is a good mate of mine, right. And he's one of the nicest human
what
beings
a year he had.
You could ever meet. But he's also somebody you want on your team.
Yep.
Nick, come on.
All right. Well, you heard it here first.
Come on, Nick. You know, true story, he messaged me once. I think the boys, the West Coast boys, were coming up to Sydney. Mm. And I got the feeling they'd been in Melbourne, they hadn't gone back home, and they were coming back up. Anyway, he messaged me and he said, we're coming up to Sydney, Lynn. Can you recommend any good places to go and eat? And I messaged him back and I went, you're brave. Asking a dyed-in-the-wool Swan supporter where you can all go and eat.
Food poisoning.
Let me think now.
Where's the dirtiest takeaway restaurant yes. You can send them to make sure they get a stomach bug?
But I'm hot and cold about them. But yeah, definitely Brisbane Lions, definitely St Kilda.
Maybe
and Adelaide, meh, no, not really. Can I tell you who I don't like?
Yeah. I feel like that's what we've been leading to. Go on.
Hawthorne.
Of course.
I can't explain it. I do not like them. We were there in 2014. My heart was ripped out and squashed and thrown on the ground. Luckily, I was doing Dancing with the Stars and I'd already made the decision, win, lose or draw, I had to leave it behind and go and start, you know, rehearsing. And I was able to do that. But it was a shellacking of monumental proportions. So
was that when the dislike began?
I think it started before then.
I mean, it's easy to dislike Hawthorn, especially, you know, I mean, I think most of the league feels that way, but entirely because they're so good. I mean, that's the thing that's annoying about them. Yes, they were the unsociable Hawks for a while and they like to sort of, you know, push the limits and stuff. No. But you can't deny they weren't an incredible team.
Oh, they were.
With one of the greatest coaches of all time.
Yes, who will tell you?
Yes.
You see, that's another thing. Yeah, that's right. That's another thing. So anyway, yeah, I'm not big on them. And, Collingwood. I don't mind Nathan Buckley. I think he's good. And I think some of their players are great. But I'm afraid old mate at the top of the ladder just does my head in. So I'm...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. But, yeah, predominantly Hawthorn and of course, Richmond. I don't like them anymore either.
Yeah, well, that's what happens, though, when you win 3 out of 4 grand finals.
Well, it does. Tends to hate you. It does, yeah. Particularly when you kind of wander in from 5th.
Yeah.
Or 6th.
I think there's more in the tank with those guys.
Do you really? Yeah.
I mean, when Dustin Martin is a once in a generation player. Mm. Like he was. Did you see the grand final? He was incredible in the grand final.
No, I didn't. But
just phenomenal.
My daughter, who wouldn't know an AFL game if it hit her over the head, was watching it with her partner, who was like a Parramatta supporter. So they just were watching it, and she messaged me and she went, "Oh my God, Mum, the game was insane." And I think it was insane. That last quarter again that they just went whoosh.
But it was also an insane game. Like, and I know that we're talking about the Swans, but we can digress to talk about the grand final for a little bit.
Of course we can.
The first quarter, you had, Gary Ablett, Nick Vlosten and Gary Ablett getting knocked out and Gary Ablett breaking his shoulder within the same play. Then you had like field invaders run onto the ground. Like it was just the most chaotic, insane game of football. And Geelong were winning. And then it was like Richmond just said, okay, we're gonna play now. It was like the Princess Bride where they were playing with their left feet and suddenly they're like, we're not left-handed. Yeah. We're now going to play properly.
I didn't watch it because I saw the score. We must have been out somewhere. But I saw the score up until about half time. And Geelong had been leading. And I think at half time they were down 2 points, something like that. And then Richmond just, just shat all over them. And it's like, how can you turn up for half a game and then go, Anyway, it was...
So I think I might know the answer to this because you sort of hinted it before. So would Goodsy be your all-time favourite Swan?
I wrote down a couple, to be honest.
Oh, did you?
Yes. Of course, we've spoken about Nick Davis.
It's like the Oscars. You don't want to leave anyone out.
I don't because I really love
Remember
them all.
Remember, thank
I
your love, agent
like,
at the end of this.
Another one of my favourites was Ty Keneally. I loved him.
Oh, yeah.
And again, you know, I find it hard to draw a line because I know some of these... people, I've met them, doing other stuff. And they're such lovely, the Irish. You can't beat the Irish. But you know what? I'm going to have to say, even though Buddy at his best is almost unbeatable, it's got to be Goodsy. It's got to be Goodsy for an all-rounder, for a player who came on board when he was young. The shit he went through, he won the 2005 Grand Final for us. And
he won the 2012 Grand Final.
Yes,
I mean, Nick Malcheski kicked the winning goal, but that goal he kicked on one leg. That is, I reckon his performance in the 2012 Grand Final is kind of maybe one of the most underrated ones.
Yeah.
Like, so it was one of his ligaments, right? He did his knee. And had one leg and then just kicked that snap around the corner. And it's just like, And people forget too, like, he was a ruckman midfielder who could pinch hit forward. Like, that's... Yeah. An extraordinary player
he
to
was,
have.
Yeah,
at your
he
club.
Was next level. And of course, that was made even more wonderful because it was Hawthorn that we beat.
I
can remember just pacing up. We had people here. I was just pacing to the television, screaming at it like a banshee, and then pacing away. And then how I didn't drop dead from an aneurysm or something, I do not know.
Lynn. Try and attend a grand final where your team plays a draw if you want to know what an aneurysm feels.
Were you there?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been to every St Kilda grand final for 3 losses and 1 draw.
Wow. And then next week you kind of capitulated, didn't
you? We got smashed, yeah. And we got smashed by Collingwood. So I can sympathise with you getting belted by Hawthorn.
Yeah.
It's a horrible feeling. It's especially a horrible feeling when you're at the ground and the opposition supporters go from, being fierce barrackers to being kind of, not condescending, but, you know, they're being nice to you and you're just like, I don't want your pity. Don't make me feel better.
Speaking of Collingwood, I remember, gosh, it must be about 10 years ago, and they had always beaten us. We were kind of their bunnies for a while. And we were at the SCG. And I was there with some do you remember Lisa Gormley? Okay, so Lisa, of course, is a she's a Taswegian, but for some reason or other, she was barracking for Collingwood, possibly because her then boyfriend was a Collingwood supporter, and right. they were there. And the Collingwood supporters were like howling, and you know, just so noisy and full on, the antithesis in a way to early, you know, Sydney supporters 10 years ago. But gradually during that last quarter, whole pockets of them were just leaving the ground. It was the most glorious sight. Like en masse, just leaving.
In retreat. It's lovely.
Fantastic. So yeah, that's a very fond memory of mine too, I must say.
So tell me, what kind of when you watch the games on TV, what kind of supporter are you? Are you someone who, like you said, you're pacing up and down when it gets really close? Are you superstitious where if you leave the room and they score a goal, yes, you feel like you have to stay out of the room?
All of that. And, you know, sometimes too, I've actually got worse as I've got older. I can't actually watch the game. It makes me so anxious.
I 100%
agree with
you. I
can't watch it. I say to Paul, you tape it. If we win, I will watch it. It's a bit like watching a war movie. You know who's going to win. I don't care. I don't care. People say, but where's the fun in that? The fun is I'm not going to drop dead watching it. That's the fun.
Lynn, I'm exactly the same. But I go one step further where if I decide I don't want to know the score, so I'll turn because I am the St. Kilda supporter amongst all my friends. So people are always, you message me often during games.
Yeah.
Turn my phone off so I'm not going to get any spoilers. But I've taped it, and so what I'll do is watch it and fast forward. So every time we have the ball, it's playing at normal speed, but as soon as the opposition get it, I can't look and I fast forward. And I'll open one eye until the game starts over again and we're back in possession.
Oh, okay, so you don't know the score when you watch it?
No.
I'll
try and fast forward. Sometimes I will know the score. Like if it's a really big game where I don't think I can take it, I'll just like find out the score beforehand. But other times I like to watch the game on fast forward just to see like, okay, so once I get the anxiety out of the way and then I'll have a second watch at normal speed when I can take it.
Do you watch games that you win well or win more than once?
Yeah. This year, and you got to remember, Lynn, I've been in the desert for 10 years. I've been a starving man. Haven't seen a lot of wins to celebrate
this
year because we had such a good year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we beat Port Adelaide in Adelaide and we beat Richmond. And so there was a bunch of games.
And you beat us.
It was like,
You did. You guys were in the top eight.
That's right. Yeah. So I have gone back and watched. It's funny. Will and I started this show in 2016. And it was what it was meant to be about. Was two guys who, because he barracks the Bulldogs, two guys who barrack for teams that have only ever won one flag in their lifetime. And then what happens? The Bulldogs win a flag.
Oh, yeah. Well,
completely...
that was the fairy tale win.
Of course. Let's talk about that. Yeah. Let's talk about that game. Yes. So I was at that one. Were you there?
No. We stopped going to grand finals after 2014. Never again.
Yeah, right.
Oh, it was awful. It was awful.
Well, probably a good call considering what happened.
I know. And it was, you know, I don't remember a lot about it. I just remember Paul was, you know, was purple with rage. Effing bloody fairy, because they kept banging on about the fairy tale win.
Yeah.
Look, maybe it wasn't, but.
As someone who was at the ground, it definitely felt like it was Sydney versus the rest of Australia.
Yes.
Like everyone was behind the Bulldogs. Including the umpires, it appears.
Yes, absolutely.
So, now, I'm not suggesting anything like there was any kind of a conspiracy or whatever.
No.
But there is an influence that the crowd has on umpires. Like I just think that's a natural thing that, you know, when a tackle's made and the crowd roars, like the umpire is more likely to blow the whistle. It happens when West Coast play a team, you know, over in WA. It happens when Sydney play a team at the SCG. So I do feel like, plus Buddy's injury in the first quarter didn't help you guys. But, you know, it was a game that you just looked like you were off. You know?
Yeah, we weren't. But it was one of those years where we'd played really well, and then it's like we kind of hit our peak before the grand final, whereas the Bulldogs didn't. They just, you know, they got there. And
well, they just had an incredible... Well, you know what they had? They had your 2005 run.
Yeah.
Every final that they played leading up to 2016 grand final was incredible. It was a Nick Davis game every game. Like, they played that Nick Davis game against GWS the week before. Yes. So I know Paul doesn't like the fairy tale, but other people love the fairy tale.
But it was. You're absolutely right. It was Sydney versus the rest of Australia. And it when I say fairy tale, I guess I mean because it would have been so long since the Bulldogs had won anything. And it was almost like they were the underdogs. They were looked at as the underdogs.
But they were the underdogs. Sydney were destined to win that game. Yeah. You'd been the best team all
year. Just did not turn up.
Well, and the injury to Buddy. Yeah. I think that, I mean...
It has a psychological effect, doesn't it?
But also, like, he... You forget because he hasn't played in 2 years, but he was the best player going around. Like... And not only the best player going around, but like before Dustin Martin, probably the best big game player going around.
And to see Buddy, you know, when to do kick from the sideline and literally you've got...
They're unbelievable, those goals.
This much. Yeah. You know, that's all you can see. It's like an inch and a half. How old am I? 4 centimetres of gap. Yeah. And you have to, in your head, try and weave that ball through. Put him in front of the goalpost, couldn't kick to save himself. Yeah. Stick him out on the
boundary line. And
let him
70 metres out.
Bend it in. Unbelievable.
I mean, what a privilege, though. Like, when you think about the players that you've got to watch over the last 30 years. You know, I was talking to Titus O'Reilly last week about the Demons. And, you know, they had a period of time in the late 90s and 2000s where they made grand finals and played in the finals. And he said, yeah, but if you look at those lists, we never really had a superstar. Like, there's a bunch of good
players,
serviceable players, but you need those superstars. You've had one of those pretty much every generation or every iteration of your teams, right? Whether it was Paul Kelly and Tony Lockett or, you know, Barry Hall and
Ruse.
Brett Kirk. And yeah, but there's always been that marquee player.
Yes.
So do you feel like where the Swans are now, because obviously Buddy's well into his twilight, do you feel like you are missing that marquee player, or is there someone
I think there's a new school of thought, and that is with the young ones. We have a lot of really good young players. I mean, when you look at the team and somebody like Isaac Heaney is one up there with one of the senior players, I think that is the current school of thought. I think the days of the superstars.
Well, I think all the commentary around the Swans this year was, look, they're in a rebuild. Everyone knows that. And they played the kids. And I think that was kind of, they won a lot of, you know how a saying that, you know, you can understand how the perception of the Swans shifted in the last 10 years from being, you know, the working class underdogs to being like the silver tails. But now that sort of Buddy's, you know, on the way out and a lot of those older players are sort of moving on and you are starting with this new crop, there is a chance for you guys to reclaim
I would like that identity, don't you think? So, love. And I think that, by the way, before I forget, Dan Hannabury, that's who I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Dan Hannabury.
Got that off my chest.
Yes.
It was driving me mad.
It's been burning you.
I think that the culture at the Swans, and I can't speak for other clubs, so I'm sure it's the same, but the culture of the Swans is such that, you know, you kind of really take care of your young players. You look after them. I mean, God, how many have, you know, broken something, done? Look at Alex Johnson. You know, they'd have an injury and then 5 years later they're still there. Very sad about Alex, a wonderful player, but just breakable and bendable. Yeah. Sam Reed to a degree, but he's come good again in his later years. Naismith, I think, is another one who's just a bit breaky, a bit, you know, our tools seem to snap. No, they do. Look at Kirk Tippett. Good grief. So,
yeah.
But the younger ones who are zippy and, you know, I just think that the culture is wonderful there, and it encourages the families and the wives and the sisters and the girlfriends to all be part of it too. Does St Kilda have a women's, not a women's team, but a women's support team? Group?
I'm pretty sure
so we like have a Lassies, which
like
is ladies and Sydney Swans. So it's Lasses, but it's just women who love the Sydney Swans, and they band together, they have fundraisers, they do all that sort of thing. So it has that sort of a culture. So, but in answer to your question about having a superstar, I don't think that the salary cap is allowing that these days. And I think once Buddy bows out, and, you know, which I guess he might have to do sooner rather than later, his injuries and his hammies and all of that just, it's just not happening. Then I think maybe they will go the other way and just make it a band of brothers rather than a
that's what Paul Roos did, you know, and that people like to throw around that phrase Moneyball, but that's kind of what he did with all the spare parts players he got from other clubs, you know, guys who'd played enough games that you knew they were kind of like their bodies were ready. They were, you could play them straight away, but they were just role players. And I think that Paul Roos's influence can't be, you know, underestimated. You know, he was kind of an influence on Ross Lyon, who brought that kind of philosophy to the Saints and then to Freo and then John Longmire. And when you think about the Swans, like, they're such a stable club, two coaches in the last 20 years. Like,
Horse has been great. He's very good. He's a very stable influence.
Did you love this year when Clarko was having to go at Tom Papley for taking a dive?
Oh, yes.
When sprung it.
The look on
Horse's
face.
Conference.
Like, kettle black.
He said what?
Yeah, it was lovely. I think they have as a lot of the coaches do, which is kind of good. Yeah. It's good, you know, as long as I don't take it personally.
100%. Is there any player at the club that maybe people outside the club aren't aware of that you think is kind of like the cult hero, the enigma?
Now?
Is there a player there that, you know, now or over the last 30 years, who was the biggest enigma? I mean, Plugger was kind of an enigma, wasn't he? He was so shy and didn't do any press.
Yeah, he was an enigma. Yeah. Cult hero, of course. We've spoken about Nick Davis most definitely. For that period of time. And he will tell you about it. He loves nothing more than to talk about it. I think too, like, Mickey O was a wonderful cult hero, not necessarily an enigma. I think Goodsy was both of those. But, you know, a player that I really thought was a lovely person and quite enigmatic, and people loved him because he was such a big galumpin thing, was Lewis Roberts Thompson.
Oh, I was going to bring him up.
Yeah, because I used to call Robert Louis Stevenson.
Yeah, or BLT.
Yeah, bacon and lettuce tomato sandwich.
Every time I'd catch up with you in the makeup room or something, we'd be talking about the footy on the weekend and you'd bring up BLT. And
LT.
Who's BLT? You're right. He was a bit of an enigma, wasn't he?
He was.
He had that cult hero because he was kind of goofy looking.
He was goofy, but you know what? When he was hot, he was hot. And one of the worst things I ever witnessed was when he broke his leg in Western Australia and he was booed off the field by the West Coast supporters.
Right.
Because apparently he was taking a dive.
With his broken leg.
With his broken leg.
They're the same supporters who booed Adam Goods. Like, their judgment ain't great. Maybe that's the issue. Maybe we're getting to the bottom of all this. Maybe it's just there is an eyesight problem in the West. Maybe we need to get Specsavers over there. They've got a spot to the West Coast Eagles so they can know what they're looking at.
But he was great. I, you know, there's probably a million that I've forgotten about and haven't mentioned.
No, oh, I think
until recently, Aaliyah.
Oh yeah, that's a shame, isn't it? Devo,
absolutely Devo. But you know, you got to do what you got to do, and your contract's out, and you get a good offer. And I just he and again a beautiful person.
Mm.
And a great player who you saw get better and better and better in leaps and bounds, you know, and confident. Couldn't kick a goal to save himself. Next minute, you know, taking marks and kicking goals. It was wonderful, wonderful.
And so you've had two grand finals and you've had that amazing preliminary final. I can never say that word, preliminary.
Preliminary.
What stands out is like your happiest memory, most exciting, most inspirational, warmest memory of being a Swan supporter?
Look, I reckon, and I can't remember the date or even the year, it was probably 2017, it was the game where the whole of the SCG, including the opposition supporters, and I can't even remember who they were, held up the I stand with 37.
Yeah.
I mean, even, you know, talking about it makes me a little bit teary. That said everything. Wins, losses, great players aside, that to me is what the game is about, that as one, people stood up for and in cahoots with Goodsy, all he was standing for, against all forms of racism and bullying and, you know, call it what you like. That was a truly great moment.
You know what I also think is great about that is the way the players took ownership and defended Adam. You know, Bob Murphy wearing the 37 on his back.
They all did. That was Bob Murphy, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah,
so was that Bulldogs then? We were playing the Bulldogs?
Yeah. I don't know if it was that game, but it's interesting because all the, you know, the people who are defending booing Adam Goods were like, well, you know, I buy a ticket and I can do what I want and, you know, I'm not booing him because I'm being racist. I'm booing him because I don't like him as a player. But then you're getting the entire, you know, playing list saying, well, we don't like you booing him. You know, you're booing one of us, you're booing all of us. You know, we're not here to be like, they're not animals in the zoo. Like, it's a funny one because I for one think I love the banter of going to the football. I love the release. I love all the shit that comes out, but there is a line, and I'm amazed that some people think that there is no line, that they can just do and say whatever they want at the football.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that was evident in that situation at Collingwood where that, you know, that 13-year-old, and she, all she was doing was mimicking what her family said. And Goodsy, you know, he was so pilloried for that. And
he was
came
so
out the very next day and said, it's not about her. Yeah. I feel sorry for her. Yeah. This is what she's grown up with. It's one of those eras that, you know, hopefully we have all learned a great lesson from, but it's shameful. It's truly shameful. So that one particular match, and I think it was because he'd come back but he wasn't playing, or he was no longer going to play or something, and people just, he wasn't even there, I don't think. I think he'd gone off, you know, with his fiance or something. And everyone to a man and woman stood up and applauded, and it was a great moment. It was just a great moment.
What's been your most crushing moment? Was it the 2014 grand final? I mean, it seems to have put you off grand finals for the rest of your life.
It was pretty crushing. It was pretty crushing because it was relentless.
Yeah.
Like at no point did we go, yeah, we can get this back.
Yeah.
Maybe at the end of the first quarter, I thought it. Maybe at the end of the second quarter, I thought,
if we just kick five in a row.
Yeah, if we could just kick the next 16, we're in. But I think, that would be the most crushing moment. It would have to be, because the 2006 grand final, even though it was tight, we'd won one the year before. Yeah. And you know, it was kind of okay. It wasn't – I didn't feel gutted by it.
That's my experience of all my friends whose teams have won flags, is they become very magnanimous and generous after that. You know, like, it's like they've had their hit. They're like, sure, yeah, pass the bong on. You can have a whiff of premiership.
Yeah, it was like the Ashes. I was talking to Paul about this because we've got a little replica Ashes, right, that we bought at Lord's, and we've got friends in the UK who are mad cricketers. So every time we win the Ashes,
that's great.
And every time they win it, we have to take it over there, and there's always a photo gloating. But it was a bit like the Ashes last year when we'd already won them. We'd already retained them, but they won the last game, which meant it was a draw. But we're like, it doesn't matter because we've still got the Ashes. You know, it was like, yeah, that we're very magnanimous. We will let you win this last one just so you don't feel too bad about yourself. But we've got the Ashes. It was very much like that. And I can't wait for the next cricket season, you know, to start proper.
Linny, you're such a mad keen Swan supporter. I can't imagine if they folded that you would follow another team, or do you think you would?
Look, I probably would. I probably would. It'd take me a while to get used to it. I don't think I would follow GWS. Mm. But I don't know. I couldn't. There's one or two players there that I really don't like.
Toby Green, who's the other one?
All right, one. But he is that player.
He's a pest.
Like Buddy was when he was with Hawthorn, that player that you hated. Until suddenly, he's on your team. Yeah. Woohoo! You know. 100%. I'm not a fan of Toby, unfortunately. He's he just has that quality that he's just got the most punchable face in AFL.
He's like a psychotic cabbage patch doll. He's like Chucky come to life. He really does.
With that hair, yeah. he's quite mental. So I don't know if I would jump on that bandwagon. Paul keeps insisting that we have to go back to the Wodonga Bulldogs if that happens. But I would honestly say, and I'm not peeing in your pocket, I reckon it'd probably be St Kilda. It'd either be St Kilda or it'd be Brisbane.
Right.
Because I think they're two teams that I like. I've never found them to be dirty or anything like that. I just think they're good teams with good players. Plus, you know, at the moment you've got you've got Hannah's, yeah, and you've got Zach Jones.
There's always been a bit of an open border between the Swans and the Saints. We do a lot. Yeah, we do a lot of player trading, don't we?
You take these two, and we'll take this one. Yeah, and that's okay. That's okay too.
So you've forgiven St Kilda when Tony Lockett was playing for them, when he smashed Peter Cavan's face in at the SCG that day with a pig.
No, I don't remember that. Okay. But that must have been very early days,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing you didn't see that incident, because
I wouldn't like
you wouldn't
him.
Like, yeah. No.
But did he do a Barry Hall? Did he go what? I didn't punch his face in. It just fell in by itself.
Lynn, it's been so great talking to you. I really hope we can do this again. Quickly before we go, what are your predictions about the Swans in 2021?
I think we will do better than we did this year. I think it's a gradual process. I think a lot of it will revolve around Buddy, and that doesn't mean to say revolve around whether he plays or not. I think if it's apparent that he's not going to play, then I think they need to just focus on that and not even think about that he's going to be there, that they have to focus on the young ones. I think we've got a couple of new talls coming in.
Yeah.
Let's hope they're not bendy and breaky.
Yeah.
I think Suffer is in the ruck.
Wouldn't it be great, though, just to see one final vintage Buddy season?
Oh, like, darling, it would be wonderful.
Kind of the way Gary Ablett, like, I know the grand final was a disappointment, but he had a really good final year.
He had a great year.
Because I think if we're going to send Buddy off, let's do it in style. You just hate to see him finish his career on the bench or, you know, in rehab or anything like that.
I hear you. I absolutely hear you. What you want is a Steve Waugh or an Alan Border farewell. You don't want an Ian Healy.
Exactly. And we'll leave it there.
When suddenly he just wasn't there anymore. It's like, well, can we not say goodbye to this master? That was awful. I hated that. So you're right. That's what we want. We want a big, you know, a big farewell
for Buddy.
Yeah, totally.
Lynn, thanks so much.
My pleasure, darling. Lovely talking to you.
We are two guys, one cup.